All right, here we go. We've got everything. Hey, everybody. Welcome. We have a guest, as promised.
Hi, I'm Poon Master Flex.
Well, you sound just like yourself.
I like cats a lot. Cats are great.
I use Instagram and YouTube, and my recommended things have all been infected by cat material.
By cat videos. Oh, this is Ian. Yeah. Just in case the disguise fooled some of you out there in podcast land. You can't really say radio land, can you?
I call it radio land.
You call it radio land?
I don't understand the podcast term because I feel like that's something that Apple invented.
Yeah, they kind of got in on the ground floor with that.
What the pod part is, right? Is the iPod. Mm-hmm.
What would you call it? Because before that, people had made radio shows on the internet.
Yeah.
And they didn't call them podcasts.
They called it internet radio.
Yeah, they just kind of said it's like radio, but on the internet.
Yeah.
Because something like syndicated internet radio wouldn't work. But actually, you know what you could call them? Sirs.
That's Kevin Smith took that.
Yeah.
It's Modcast Internet Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I've been wanting for a long time. If there's anyone of my dozen of listeners who has the ability to do this, I want to be able to drop all my shows into like one folder on a server. Mm-hmm. And then have basically a nonstop streaming radio that pulls from those shows. So that at any time, you could just sign on to the website and get on a certain page. And there would just, you know, it's just streaming. And it's like, maybe it's just episode 154. Maybe it's episode 4.
It's like WFMU has like different radio streams. Like one's the regular network. And then they just have like three other music streams going all the time.
Yeah.
And you just want something like that. But it just kind of like plays random episodes.
Yeah.
And so you could just drop in at any point, and an episode's playing, and you'll be like, oh, that'd be an interesting way for people to sort of discover the show.
Right. Because, you could just click on, and at any time you're listening to, you know, who knows?
Be like, you're listening to 153, and then after that it's 8, and then it's, you know, 69420.
And it's just always streaming.
You do have an episode 69420, right?
I don't know.
Maybe this one could be 69420.
Oh, God.
All right.
We're back to drinking cheap beer.
Exactly.
I mean mostly me. Yours is a mid-level beer here.
See, this is the thing that I'm drinking a Fat Tire.
Yeah.
And we get no money from any of this, so.
We don't get any. We do get a little money.
Yeah.
I have a Patreon.
I know.
But I don't think I've announced on here yet.
Oh, well, you should announce that.
We have a Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
I have two donors.
Ooh.
Who are lovely people. And you know what?
What?
It takes a lot of guts to be one of the first few. Because, first of all, it feels like you're donating to a failing project.
Right.
Because you're like, Jesus, this isn't going anywhere. And it feels very conspicuous. But also, you know.
I guess I can say I've donated to a lot of Kickstarter things. That's almost become a hobby of mine.
Yeah.
Of like getting Kickstarter stuff.
I was doing that a lot, and then you know what? Why I stopped doing it recently? I have been getting so many fucking emails because they email you updates, and like now they're emailing, a lot of things are emailing to be like, do you want to donate again this year?
Right.
You know, and I'm just like, leave me alone.
Sometimes it feels like some people have used Kickstarter as a way of funding something long term, like it's part of their business plan, as opposed to the word Kickstarter is to be like, you get a little bit of money to get going, or like you have money to do a weird project and then it gets off the ground and then you find something else.
Yeah, I think it's hard to do it as a sort of consistent source rather than whatever. But anyway, there's a Patreon. If you go to my webpage, it's up at the top. You can go there. You can donate for low, low prices
and get
money.
And you can get stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like abstract stuff, not like material stuff. Yet.
Well, there's like secret bonus episodes.
Ooh.
So if you're signed up during a given month, you'll get that month's secret bonus episode.
Mm-hmm.
There's a secret bonus newsletter.
Ooh.
Humor-wise. There's, mm-hmm. you know, other shit.
And a secret bonus newsletter is not like a newsletter that's just full of buy my books. No. Buy my stuff.
That's what the regular newsletter
is. The regular newsletter is for that. So you get a different newsletter of content you can't find anywhere else.
And in fact, we have a regular newsletter,
ooh.
Which actually has not contained any of that kind of stuff so far. The only thing it's really contained is your entry to Helpful Snowball 2013 Part 2.
Which I will sign up for eventually.
I have an entry sheet here.
Okay.
I thought if you wanted to, you know, we could go through some of these things.
Like preview it a little bit so that way people are encouraged to get started.
Preview.
Yeah.
So there's a category here that basically has all the books I have on Amazon.
Okay.
And there's a column for bought, read, and reviewed.
Okay.
For each one of those things you've done for each one of these books, you know.
All right.
Put a little check mark.
So.
That's the naked ploy of.
Let me go. I just want to see the
sure.
books. Let's see. I have bought almost all of these.
Well, that's something.
I think there's the only two I haven't bought. It looks like one. I think I haven't bought one of them.
Well, that's pretty good. Which one did you say was beneath your?
I think
notice?
It's the. I think it's just the Save the Arcanid.
Arcade.
I think that's the one. I think that's the one I just didn't know about. Like when I'm reading this now, I'm like, what the hell is that? So
Save the Arcade is the newest joint
mm-hmm.
that I put out. And it's a tale of some people who try to save their arcade, which is being shut down by evil Japanese condo developers.
Of course.
And they try to do this through various topless means. So they start a topless Jeep tour
right.
in the style of the Great Bikini Off-Road Adventure.
Is there really tall salt?
No.
Oh.
They have a topless volleyball tournament, much like, I believe, South Beach Academy.
Okay.
There's a topless car wash.
All right.
You know, they try all these various topless methods of saving the arcade. Are they successful?
Well, you'll have to buy the book and find out.
I have to find out. Also, interestingly enough, today I spent quite a bit of time creating analog versions of these that you can buy from Amazon. I have an analog version of Save the Arcade.
Ooh.
Would you like to walk away with it today?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I could walk away with it for the low,
Hold
low
on.
Price.
I'll be right back.
Zero.
Free.
Ooh, I got a free book. Well, that's a good thing. See, if you are a guest on the show, you can get free stuff. You're not guaranteed to get free stuff, but it's a stronger possibility than not being on the show. I mean, it's sort of the odds are greater than zero if you're on the show, but if you're not on the show, your odds are zero.
So here it's, you know, a print version.
Ooh.
Amazon makes these. Oddly uh-huh. enough, the print versions of almost all my books are cheaper than the digital.
Sometimes that's baffling to me. Like, what makes the digital thing so much more like what it makes print so much cheaper?
Well, maybe this isn't actually cheaper. It's just that I put all the print versions on mm-hmm. and I set them as very cheap because I want to buy copies.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe I'll jack up the price. But also, here's my theory. I wanted my prints to be cheaper to encourage people to buy the print, because when you buy the print, now this is sitting around somewhere.
Ah.
Right? You buy that ebook. No one knows what you're reading. You're just on the train.
I could be reading, you know, Immanuel Kant's A Critique of Pure Reason, but no, I'm reading Wads of Power.
Right. They think you're reading Immanuel Kant.
Right.
And this is Save the Arcade.
I really don't like Immanuel Kant's. I like automatic Kant's.
A novella of games, bikini car washes, and friendship, and other bikini stuff. Would you like to hear the introduction?
Why don't we save that?
Because I want to do it.
Okay.
This is a story about the time our sweet arcade almost got shut down by evil Japanese condo developers. But in a way, it's also a story about friendship, loss, love, betrayal, and the best friends I'll ever have. But in another, more accurate way, it's about the time we used naked boobs to save our arcade from evil Japanese condo developers. So here you go. Congratulations. Ooh,
I got this one. So what I really should do, though, is go off on Amazon, buy my own print copy,
right,
and take this print copy and put it in, say, a little free library.
That would be a great thing to do.
Because then I can pass on the readings. I did have a note that I think we got off into different directions, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I was doing a little drum solo before we started and realized that this is, like, right now we're in the holiday season.
Okay.
And I realized that there are no Christmas songs with drum solos, including Little Drummer Boy, which should have a drum solo in it.
It should be like Wipeout, but Christmas.
Right. And I mean, everybody knows if you could give Jesus one thing, the thing you would give him is a sweet drum solo.
Okay.
You would appreciate. That's what, isn't that what Little Drummer Boy is about? Is it's like he doesn't have anything to give to Jesus?
I don't know. Is, like, that what it's about?
Yeah. It's the whole song. It's like everybody else comes with gifts. And he
have no things for you. Da, na, 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 na.
Right.
Here is some drums for you. Rum, pum, pum, pum.
And so all he's like is like rum, pum, pum, pum. Yeah. He's playing something like that's all he's got.
So he's just standing there going.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a shitty beat to a club banger that was made on a Casio keyboard or something.
But it's not even that, because it's made by like a little kid. So you know it's going to be like out of rhythm and he's going to rush at times. Like, I kind of want Joseph to be like J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, just yelling at him like, that's good enough for the Son of God. That's shit. Go faster.
Now, don't you think at the time Jesus was born, you know, the year fucking zero, whatever, negative, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't a drum like a luxury item?
I guess so.
Couldn't you probably trade that for something else? I mean, it's not like he needed that. It's not like he was in a high school band.
There wasn't really a high school, so there wouldn't be a high school band. And there wouldn't be high school bands until, of course, John Philip Sousa.
Okay.
Which came about 1800 years after Jesus.
This is probably true.
So Jesus, if he wanted like good drum music, he was born way too early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the quality is going to suffer just a little bit from the era.
Right. And I was thinking of John Philip Sousa because I think it's a book we've both read, that Chuck Klosterman book, What If We're Wrong?
Okay.
Where he talked about like one of those great musicians that's not one that we all recognize as a great musician, of John Philip Sousa.
Sure.
Where he talked about like everybody knows what a Sousa march is, even if you don't really know who John Philip Sousa is.
Band teachers love it.
Right.
Your band teacher knows all about it.
Your band teacher does, but it's this kind of song that even though you don't think, oh, this is the great American song, you're like, nope, you recognize it immediately as what it is.
Did he do...
No, that was Gary Glitter.
Did he do like... Da-na-na-na-na, hey, da-na-na-na.
That's also Gary Glitter. That's the same song.
Hmm.
I mean, it is rock and roll in two parts. No one knows what part one is.
I've heard Rock and Roll Part One. It's also pretty good.
Ah.
It doesn't have a hey.
Right.
So there's not as much stuff to do at a stadium.
That maybe in 100 years or 200 years from now, people will remember that song, but they will forget the fact that he's had a whole bunch of child pornography.
Why do the catchiest makers of catchy music all involve in child sex stuff?
Like, there's a lot of things with musicians who have weird sex things.
Okay, you've got... That Gary Glitter.
Yeah.
He had child porn.
Right.
You've got Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
All alleged. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say it happened. You've got Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yep.
He wasn't like little kids, but like super young girls.
If
memory serves.
He was like, he was on the wrong side of barely legal.
Yeah.
Like for our day and age. I think he also married his cousin.
I think that may be true.
I mean, that was also, he was at the end of an era where like marrying your cousin, like FDR married one of his cousins, I think.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you were really rich, you married your cousins all the time.
Wait a minute. But Eleanor Roosevelt was his cousin?
Like a first cousin or something, I think.
So, okay.
Like maybe it's like a second cousin.
Is there a lot of speculation that she's lesbian?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, this makes sense to me. Like if you're marrying your cousin basically to act as a beard.
Yeah, you're marrying your cousin to act as a beard. I think he's marrying...
That's a solid beard. Because who's going to question that? Who's going to be like, if you're going so far as to marry your cousin,
right?
No one's going to be like, I wonder if this is just a sham. Because it's like, well, just marry some fucking guy. Don't marry your cousin.
Yeah, like just marry...
Why put up with all the shit?
find some dude. And I mean, it's also that like he had polio, so you had to marry somebody who wasn't. You had a secret that was worse than yours or harder to keep. Like if you both have a big secret that you don't want people to know.
Yeah.
You know, you marry someone else who has a big secret that you don't want them to know.
Why did he care so much if people knew he had polio?
I think people would assume that he wasn't going to be strong enough to be president. Or
I
like
see.
He would die in office, which seems like a, sometimes if you're, I know that you would think in December you wouldn't have political stuff on your show anymore. But I do feel like if you have to stare at a presidential candidate and be like, I don't know if he's going to live 4 years or not, probably don't vote for that person.
I feel like this is something they use against candidates when it's convenient.
Yeah.
But not, you know, because, yeah, that would be a great argument against it, I think, would be like, well, you know, okay, McCain, they did that. Who's that other fucking old guy with the dead arm?
Oh, Bob Dole.
Was that Bob Dole?
That was Bob Dole. Yeah, because he had the...
Yeah, Bob Dole. So... They use it against these candidates, right? But then when you think about it, you're like, well, FDR was pretty great, and he could have died at any time. You know, or like fucking Lincoln died, and he was
There's
great.
Plenty of presidents, I mean, who died at any, like, who died in the middle of their term. Most of the time,
great.
It wasn't their fault.
Yeah.
I mean, one guy. There was the one guy, like, that died in 30 days. It was the guy who died in his inauguration.
Yeah, that asshole who, like, stayed outside to do a long speech or something.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, insist, and then he just died.
And he just got, like, he didn't get a jet, like, he didn't put on a jacket.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought it was weird that there were no Christmas songs with drum solos. I don't know how we got onto presidential politics, but...
I just want everyone to know, so, like, when Ian comes, I'm usually like, did you have any things you want to talk about? And he's usually like, yes, I had a few things, and he'll write them down. So that was part one of three.
That's part one of three. I figured...
Why don't Christmas songs have drum solos?
I feel like... I feel like we got a lot out of something that was like a good... It's a good bit. I feel like that's...
I'm not complaining.
I feel like that's the way... This is modeling good guest behavior of sometimes I think the best way to deal with Helpful Snowman is to like give you a topic and then sort of let it go.
To see what happens.
And kind of see what happens. And the less specific it is... Actually, that's very specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not mocking you. I think what's funny about it to me is imagining... I like to imagine... when people came up with the things, right?
Right.
I'm imagining you sitting around today, like, you know, we were talking about, okay, the tea tavern.
Right.
You're sitting at the tea tavern with a cup of tea, and then you're, you know, reading a book, and then you just look up and stare at the wall, and in your mind, you're just thinking, like, how come no Christmas songs have a fucking drum solo?
It's like the subreddit, the, like, shower thoughts, of where you just have a weird thought that pops into your brain.
Yeah.
Where really that should be titled High Thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, like, that's, you know, I actually had that thought, like, while you were preparing for the show, and I was, I made it a drum solo to a different song, and I was like, why are there no Christmas songs with drum solos?
Oh, so that just happened.
Yeah, that just happened.
Okay.
That was a spontaneous thing. I had other stuff written down. I did want to talk about the airport, because I feel like this becomes the airport podcast whenever you fly on a plane.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally. Yeah, and you just flew in.
I flew in.
Boy, are you,
And boy, is my penis tired. That's how that joke goes, right?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Something about you is tired because of the physical act of flying.
Right. And flying into Colorado is always a hazard in the wintertime.
True.
People always ask, like, when I come from Phoenix to, like, really, like, why I don't drive.
Oh, yeah.
And most of the time my answer is something along the lines of it's just too long. Because it's like, there's a maximum length where it's unfun to drive by yourself, and I feel like 12 hours is like, that's not really fun.
You know, I think there's like, it's a weird thing because I think that there's like you know, people who prefer the hassle of driving and people who prefer the hassle of flying,
right?
Because they both have their own hassles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, for me, I prefer the hassles of flying because being in a car for like 8+ hours is fucking boring.
Yes.
Even though, I mean, if you fly somewhere that's like an 8 to 10 hour drive, let's say, I mean, it takes the same amount of time to get there. You know what I mean? You leave your house super early in the morning, you go through security, you wait a couple hours, you fly a couple hours, takes you a couple hours to get where you're staying. You know, it takes almost the same amount of time. However, most of that time, you don't actually have to do anything when you fly. You're just kind of sitting there.
It's the, I I think my example of an airport of how little you actually have to do. I was at an airport once and I was super hungover. Mm-hmm. Like just super duper hungover. And all I had to do was muster the energy to get through security.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of muster enough attention to get on the plane.
Colonel Muster.
And then once that was done, I was okay. Like that's all I had to do. It's sort of like, you know, I sort of had to muster a half hour of energy and then like another half hour of attention.
I boarded a plane very drunk one time because I drank a little bit and then our plane was late. So I was like, well, I'm just going to drink some more. And so by the time the plane went off, I was like, you know, in a good spot. And the hardest thing was holding my pee until we got to cruising altitude.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had to pee.
Yeah. It's the thing I've learned from the airport bar is that I've been delayed once.
Yeah.
And I remember being delayed so long. Like everybody was delayed. And the bar was offering, if you bought a beer, they would give you a shot for free.
Yeah.
And I got super drunk.
Yeah.
And I had just the same problem.
You know, the best part of this particular trip was like, I was reading this book that I didn't really like that much, but it was all I had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of wanted to just plow through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of started drinking. And then, it sure went fast when I was drunk. Which, you know, because I couldn't really read.
Right. Like, I've had that experience too where you're like, I'm reading this book. And you're like, you're not actually absorbing any words. You're just going through stuff.
It was this book. It was this memoir called The Film Club.
Mm.
And it was about this guy who let his son drop out of school. But then like, I don't know, like every day, every week, something, they watched a movie together and then did sort of like a, you know, film school about it.
Right.
And, you know, the dad was like a professor or something. And the son, it's not like he was like in third grade. I think he was like in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he was probably just missing like the last semester of high school or some shit.
He was missing the part of high school that I don't know what your high school experience was like in detail.
Mm-hmm.
But I could say that I learned nothing in my last year of high school. Like nothing.
I remember taking a class called Mass Media,
mm-hmm.
where we watched movies.
Yeah.
And we had to write papers, and they were handwritten, and the papers were graded based on length. And so however many pages, and then I was furious because I wrote a paper that was basically, you know, I don't know, it was like 6 pages gets you an A, let's say.
Right.
A 6-page diatribe on why Casablanca sucked. And then I got, you know, a B. And I was like, what the fuck? I completed the requirements. You know, you didn't like the jokes. And they were like, well, it was just about how the movie sucks. And I was like, so fucking what? Then you need to make better requirements. Like, how is that my fault?
You completely met the requirement. If the only requirement was length, then...
I don't think I was being disingenuous. I mean, maybe what they really wanted was more dissection of the film. But they should have said that instead of just being like, here's how many pages for an A, here's how many for a B.
I'll say as a practitioner of the teacherly arts, as you once called me.
Oh, okay.
Like, I have that where I'm writing, you know, when students are writing about a film, I have length as one of the grading criteria. So
sure.
If it's the, why didn't I get an A? Well, okay, it wasn't long enough, but everything else was there. So maybe you get like a B or a C, right? Like it's saying you can't, or maybe you're not, if it's awesome, but it's just not long enough, you can get like an A minus.
Sure.
You know, it's sort of saying like, here's a basic requirement.
Sure.
You know, it's not hard. It's a test, like, honestly, that's a test of can you follow directions more than anything else?
Yeah.
Which is a valuable life skill.
Sure.
But if your only grading criteria is 6 pages or not, it's not real. You don't really have to actually read the pages.
No.
I mean,
which I think was the whole point for them, because they were like, you know, we don't actually have to read this shit if you just.
It's like,
I wish I still had that paper. Like, I wish I could go back in time now and, like, I wish I had all my high school papers.
Oh.
Because they must be fucking crazy.
There's got to be like some, I'm going to guess the high school papers are not in, actually, I think I do have some of my high school papers.
Oh, that would be great.
I'll try and find some of them.
You should see if you can find them.
I'm sure because they're in a binder that's not likely to get thrown out.
Okay.
So if I can find that binder, then they're probably still in there.
I think I do have like one high school paper that is somewhere that I wrote about censorship or something.
I found one of my college notebooks.
Yeah.
That actually our mom has it just laying open to one of the pages of my notes.
Okay.
It's from my first day of Arabic class.
Is this to like decorate a room or something?
I don't know what it is. It's just like I came home. And I came to her house, and like she had some of the books that I had up in my room, like in a different room for some reason.
Okay.
And she had this page open, and it was like from my first day of Arabic, where I'm like writing a letter, and I'm like, here's a thing. And I'm like, I'm a little confused as to like, first of all, it's not like an invasion of my privacy, because I'm like, right. I barely, it's just, I don't
like
even remember this exists.
Notebook
right,
or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, why did you open this and stop there? Like,
and why wouldn't you close it if you knew I was coming home?
Right. Or it's like, why did you just leave it open? Is it like this?
Yeah.
It might be one of those like, oh, this looks like it could be important. But I'm like, when I went through the other classes, I'm like, I've moved beyond I've moved beyond all of this stuff. So
do you think if you had a kid, let's say you had a kid, they move out and they leave behind, you know, a series of diaries starting from when they're, you know, 12. Up through 18.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they're off at college at fucking Florida State. I don't know.
So you're like, are you looking for something that's not quite Ivy League, but something like,
the college isn't important other than it's far away,
it's distant,
and I assumed you wouldn't live in Florida.
Okay.
At this time, so it's not like they're gonna come walking in.
It's geographically
like, hey,
distant.
Yeah. Do you think you'd read them? I mean, they're just sitting there. There's no reason to think they would ever know you'd read them.
I think that I probably would. I have a strong guess that most of what I would read would be really, I want to say no.
Yeah.
Because
everyone wants to say no.
My strong guess is, having written my own journal about, like, you know, around that time period.
Okay.
I don't
between
go back
12 and 18.
No, but like I tried to write journals during that time period. I was more successful in college.
Oh, sure.
But I don't want to go back and read, like, when I discovered them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had discovered like an old journal I had when I was in college.
Okay.
And I went back to, and I wasn't interested in my own journal.
Right.
I don't know if I'd be more interested in my kid's journal than I am in my own. But then again, like, there's part of me that would wonder, like, oh, what did the kid experience?
Yeah.
But I don't think, unless something really weird happened, like, you know, I knew this was the journal of like when we were getting a divorce, or you know, like when the aliens invaded.
Well, yeah.
I would say if the kid was still alive, like the kid was at college, no.
Okay.
If the kid was dead,
why is the kid?
I would say yes.
I understand why that makes a difference. It's just such an odd, like, you know, you're setting up these very odd caveats to, like, when the answer is basically no.
Right.
But you just want me to be clear on the fact that you're like, well, if I was emotionally destroyed and it was the only way for me to connect with my dead child, then I might do it.
Yeah.
As if I would call you out on that and be like, you said you would never do this.
I feel like it's a fair caveat, right? Like, if you...
It's totally fair. I just think it kind of goes without saying.
Like, you would do that? I mean, like...
Like, okay, but, you know, so you feel like if your kid died, their sort of need for privacy has vanished.
I think that there's not much harm in seeing what their private life was like.
Yeah.
You know, there's no harm that can be fall to them, right?
Now,
that
see, this is them. Why maybe where we differ. Because
right.
I feel like if I had a kid, I would probably... I would consider it.
Mm-hmm.
And then... most likely read about half of one and get super fucking bored.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't talk to anyone about it, because I couldn't tell, like, my wife about it, because I'd be like, she's probably going to be pissed that I'm doing this. I have to do this secret. So
it's like a hypothetical question. Like, if you knew, like, if you got the option to know the meaning of life, like the purpose of everything, but you couldn't tell anybody, just know.
Well, yeah, I would do that, except... Right. That's not a good one for me, because I don't think there is a purpose to life.
Okay.
I think it's just, you know, sperms happened on eggs and then shit happened.
And that's what, like, that's what you think right now. But if someone, and it, maybe the purpose of life isn't it, like, is just that. But if you found out, like, if you had the option to be, like, someone says, hey, do you want to know the purpose to life?
I think a better question for me would be something like, you know, what if you could know when the next 9/11 was happening?
Or
you couldn't tell anyone.
You could listen to the next Lucero album, but you couldn't tell anybody about it.
That would be fine. I don't care what anyone else thinks.
Right.
No, it's got to be something that people have, like, a stake in.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
It's like, well, I don't want to give any spoilers, but I saw Arrival. So if you haven't seen Arrival yet.
I haven't seen Arrival, so like, you can't spoil it for me either.
It deals with that question. So.
Okay.
But, and that's vague enough that it's not a spoiler.
I think it's got to be something like.
Also, there are aliens. That's not a spoiler either because that's in the trailer.
Okay, like, here's a question. Like, if you know, this thing came to you, this genie.
Right.
Or whatever, and was like, you will know how many times in the rest of your life you will fuck. And you could know that. And you can't tell anyone else.
Okay.
But you would know. Like, would you want to know? Because I would be like, I think I would. Except, you know, what if it was like 4?
Right.
And you'd be like, oh my God. And then when the next time, you know, it was like getting down to business, I'd be like, no, no. No, no.
You would try to change the future.
Yeah, because I'd be like, what's happened? Am I going to die?
Right.
You know, it'd probably be a self-fulfilling prophecy because I would put it off being afraid I was going to die. But then what happens is, you know,
you can't maintain a relationship. Yeah.
Like, no one will stay with me because they're like, you'll only fuck me once every 5 years.
Like, you can't maintain a relationship because eventually it gets to the sexy time part and you're like, you don't ever want to have sexy time.
Yeah. Oh, I have to avoid it.
You have to
avoid
it. To
the point where I have to just, like, run out of the room.
Mm-hmm. And so you basically wind up, if you had 4 times, you have it once, then you get really drunk, like, several years later.
Yeah. See, what would be great is if they were, like, you know, 150.
Right.
Because then you'd be like, all right, that's not, you know, I don't know. It's like money. You know, like chips at a casino.
Right.
When you have a lot, you're just like shelling them out. But then as you got down, you'd be like, where did it all go? What happened?
It's that if you got a really high number, like what if you got a really, really high number, like you're going to have 12,000.
Oh my God. I wouldn't even know what to think about that. Because like, all right, 12,000. So if you fuck 3 times a day, that'd
right.
be like 1,000 in a year, give or take. You know, let's assume there are some days where you just physically needed to recover
right.
from tears and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say you.
But then you would never know, because what if it was like, if it was 12,000, but like 11,000 of those were all in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then
you. So
you
did that in like a 5-year span, let's say.
Right.
I mean, even if you still had 1,000, though,
mm-hmm.
that covers you. You know, like. Okay, let's say you had sex once a week, so you'd have it 52 times a year. So, you know, every 2 years, let's say you'd have it 100 times. That's another decade
right.
of sex once a week. Like, that's still
if
a
you're,
lot.
Like, it's sort of if you had 1,000 or so, you'd be like, okay, I've got some time left.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe
like,
if
it would
you
be
got,
a lot to have if you had, like, 12,000.
Right.
There's almost no way you can spread that out and be like, well, I'm having a lot of sex,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless I'm living to be like 150 and still able to have sex at that age.
There would be some kind of, are you saying like there's some kind of monkey's paw scenario where you were like, you're an invalid at 80, but you're constantly raped in the old folks home?
Something like, yeah that would be. Yeah, it's like, be careful what you wish for. And
yeah.
I was like, I didn't even
that's
wish
like the,
to have sex.
The
I just wanted to know how many.
In the worst Tales of the Crypt episode ever. Tales from the Crypt episode ever.
Be careful what you...
This one's called The Randy Old Fellow. He's not really Randy. He's being raped constantly.
It's just 22, well, I guess 19 minutes of a guy being raped in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Crypt Keeper's like, well, that was unexpected. I'm honestly a little taken aback. That's not really horror. That's just awful.
That's just bad.
That's just inappropriate. Well, see you next time.
See you next time, boys and ghouls. Don't normally go to that pun, but I have to.
Yeah. I just, you know, I'm working off what I've got on the top of my head at this point.
How do I make a Halloween pun about elderly rape?
It's sort of like the time we went on the air moments after 9/11. you go into autopilot.
God, I wonder what a Tales from the Crypt right after 9/11 would be like.
Oh, geez.
Because I heard from, like, one of the things that people talk about or don't really talk about much after 9/11 was the idea of finding, like, little body parts.
We talked about this on this show.
Right.
And could not confirm that that was real.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like bullshit, but I don't know.
Yeah, but it seems like, I wonder
I'm sure somebody did.
Right.
But was this,
it's called a first responder in the tower.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some dude was walking to, you know, fucking get the ferry or whatever, and then saw an arm.
See, right? I have impressions of, like, Sopranos and Law and Order. Like, people just find bodies in New York just all the time.
Yeah.
Like, in the way that we think about, you're never, like, 100 yards or, like, 20 yards away from a spider or some small number.
Yeah.
I imagine if you're in New York, you're never that far from a dead body.
Yeah, maybe.
Like an undiscovered dead body, not like, oh, you're next to a cemetery, you're next to a dead body.
Yeah. I guess it's possible, but like to be next to a corpse that's been like brutally murdered, you know, because if you live in a city of like a million, however million people, yeah, naturally, and then you walk a half a mile to work, how many people do you pass? You know what I mean? Like how many apartments do you go by?
Speaking of brutal murder, okay. At the airport.
Yeah.
I have come on board with you on the sort of like how you're supposed to wait for your check bags.
Yeah.
Where I find it baffling. It's something that I had thought about, like what benefit is it to stare at the baggage claim while waiting for it to come out? I get the idea that people have of like, well, someone will steal my bag if I don't watch at all times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know that that's true.
It can't be true, and here's why. If this was happening frequently, even remotely frequently, there would be way more. You'd have to, like, the fact that you don't have to show any kind of ticket that you even check the bag is insane. So if this was happening with any kind of regularity, this would not happen. You know what I mean? There would be, for how tight everything is controlled at the airport, I feel like it's just not possible. Or it's just not happening, I should say. It's not possible. Like, it seems to me like it'd be really easy. Like, you know, I go pick up Poon Master Flex at the airport. We wait by the baggage, and I'm like, I'm going to steal a fucking bag. So whatever bag is next to yours, let's just pretend it's also. And then it's so easy, too, because then, you know, I'm like, you go to the bathroom.
Right.
I'm going to get your bag and one other bag. And then, you know, if someone sees me taking it and they're like, that's my bag, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was waiting for her bags. I thought this was hers too.
Right.
Done and done.
And it's sort of like, so I never quite understand that.
Yeah.
I never understand the sort of waiting around. And also the idea of like, I have to be in the front of the line.
Yes.
Because I had to like negotiate around people once my bag actually came out.
Yeah. You have to be like, well, if you're done just fucking staring at this thing going in a circle.
Right.
Maybe you could get the fuck out of my way.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, so I work at a library, and we've discussed some alternative library setups. Because, you know, they're always like recataloging shit and reorganizing stuff. You know, like right now they're reorganizing, they're creating a biography section.
Are you going to create a section that is ambiguous fiction? Like you're not sure how real it is or not. It's between nonfiction and fiction. It's close.
Well,
you're like, it's like unproven fiction or like embellished nonfiction.
Is the library going to do this? No.
No.
Would I do this? Yes. Because one of my newest eccentric millionaire ideas is to open up a library / bookstore where the organization scheme changes like every week.
Right.
So here are some of the organization schemes I've come up with. Number one is the organization scheme I call Pete's Giant Pile of Books. When things come in, they go on the floor. The next thing that comes in goes on top of that thing. And then eventually you've just got a big pile of books.
See, I have this system for my laundry.
Yeah.
And I will tell you exactly what this favors.
Okay.
It favors the new.
Yes.
In that basically whatever's what's newest is going to be at the top of the pile. Yeah. Yep. It's always going to kind of stay at the top of the pile.
I'm picturing this looking like, you know, you ever see, I feel like it's happening in like India or something, and you've got kids in a giant dump who are scavenging for whatever. I feel like that's what it would look like, but it's books.
It's the, I think
we've, there's like a, just a barefoot kid in there looking for whatever, you know, Captain Underpants.
I would like, I think you, what you could do that is make that for periodicals.
Okay.
And people would be like, the same kids would also be looking for like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue whenever it happens to be in there.
I can tell you where that is in our library. It's in our custodian's workroom.
Of course it is.
Under a pile of his shit. Because I found it the other day when I was looking for safety goggles, which he does not seem to possess.
So I like that you're, you know, your job, like you're at a point that required safety goggles,
yeah,
which he doesn't have.
No.
But he does have his own reading material.
Well, he's got the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition.
I mean, that's got
no
words in
other,
it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe he's trying to find the right kind of swimsuit.
I mean, porno movies have words in them if you turn the subtitles on.
Sure.
It would be interesting. Yeah, does it just say indistinct grunting?
I wonder if it's also translated into other languages,
like if in some other languages, like vow,
right?
Whatever.
Yeah, and the way that like there's all those things that come out that say like cats meow differently in different countries, mm-hmm. or cows moo differently.
Mm-hmm.
If porno grunts are different in different countries.
Possible
or translated differently.
Like, oh, this sounds very German. Well, I've seen a lot, I've heard a lot about, it seems like there are a couple countries that seem to have like a porno export or are cited as being the exporters of porno.
Okay.
Specifically Russia.
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
Well, Czech Republic.
Okay.
It'll just say a Czech person. And then, it's another kind of Eastern European country.
So there's a lot in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, a lot. And it'll be like Russian girl does this, Czech girl does that. So I don't know. The porno seems pretty similar.
I remember once on a different podcast where they were talking about like the sort of Craigslist code.
Uh-huh.
You know, and like there's sort of like you'd have, because you can't say that this is what I'll do because that would attract law enforcement.
Right,
and
like, there was
sort
of like, if you buy me 50 roses.
I'll right. See. But it was sort of like if it said like speaks Italian, it's like you could put your dick in between her butt cheeks. Speaks Greek is like in her butt.
Now, were these like, was there a reason that one was Italian and one was Greek, or was it just
an I think Greek was cipher? Because like, you know, that was a thing that Greeks did. Mostly like men and boys.
Put their penises in the butt cheeks, but not in
no,
the butthole?
No, the Greek was in the butthole.
Oh, okay.
And Italian was the idea of Catholic, right? It's like the sex you can kind of have when you haven't broken any rules.
Okay.
Russian, like speaks Russian involves vomit.
Why?
I don't know, because you drink a lot?
This seems to be trafficking in harmful stereotypes.
I agree.
It's like if it's, it's very Asian, then it's like they'll do math.
Mm-hmm.
With you, which is totally non-sexual, so you could just advertise it.
Speaks Indian and kind of smells like curry.
Yeah, like what's...
We'll drive you home in a cab and get you a Slurpee.
How come no one's taking these people down and being like, you need to use a more appropriate code?
Like you need to have some kind of other code, like the sort of handkerchief code, like red handkerchief, yellow handkerchief.
Yeah, something like that. Some kind of weird... Something.
Weird system.
I was the other day trying to decipher. I'm sure you remember when we were kids, you know, this was at the time when it's kind of a new thing for boys to have an earring.
Yeah.
And a boy would have one ear.
Right.
And there was always this thing about like, well, this ear is the gay ear.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get your ear pierced, that means you're gay. this ear.
If it's the right ear, you were gay, and the left ear, you were not gay.
Okay, and see, here's the thing, is I tried to discover, like, what was the origin of that? Was that a real thing? And here's why I didn't believe it. How would I, as a fifth grader in Greeley, Colorado, have possibly known that? And how would any of my contemporaries have known that? It's not like some gay guy came and was like, boys, just so you know, you know, it's not like there's a bunch of gay bars around here.
No.
Like, and it's not like, you know, oh, I had this gay neighbor who was like, oh, well, you know, it was just somehow this was.
There was no film
knowledge.
Strip from the 1960s explaining this to us.
If you pierce your right ear, that's gay. You know,
that means you are homosexual.
Yeah. And so I was trying to decipher whether or not this was like a real thing. And I found this book, a guy, it was like a book of photography where basically he was photographically documenting like gay style in San Francisco, like in the late 80s and early 90s.
Right.
And it had like the handkerchief stuff or whatever. And basically was like, yeah, there were some earrings, but there was no, this was not a signal to gay people at all. Like, it didn't really mean anything. Like,
it was just coincidence.
One ear or the other was irrelevant.
Right.
You know, and, like, it's not like, if you were a gay person back then, at a time when it was much riskier to probably approach someone and be like, hello, I'm gay. Would you by chance be gay? An earring would not indicate, like, oh, this is a good approach to make.
This'll work.
So I was like, okay, didn't come from the gay community. What the fuck? Who made that up and why? And how did they pick which ear?
I don't... My guess is just a bunch of kids got together and they want to identify who is gay.
Yeah, so it was like some kid who got his ear pierced, but they just didn't like him.
Right.
And they're like, well, he pierced his right ear, so that's the gay ear.
Right. Or it's like somehow it's the kind of test that a kid would make because they're like, oh, no gay kid will figure this one out. But anybody who is would be a gay kid, they would be like, I'm definitely not piercing my right ear.
That's the thing, yeah. Is like, what kid would then pierce their right ear? Even if you were gay as a kid in the 90s, you'd be like, pass.
Like, that would be the worst thing you could do.
Yeah, it would not be a good idea.
You would get like two piercings in your left ear.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
Something.
You just pierce your penis.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be like, well, I don't know.
That is a thing I've heard that was more common among gay men, though.
Pierce penises?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not sure. I don't have the data for that.
Yeah.
But
I don't either. But the pierced penis thing is crazy to me. Like, just stabbing yourself in the penis.
Well, someone else stabs you. I don't think you do it by yourself.
Either way.
Yeah.
Allowing it to paying.
Paying for the experience.
To be stabbed in the penis. Like, that's such a weird. If I came home, you know, to Poon Master Flex and was like,
right,
how was your day? And I was like, it was pretty cool. Like, I paid this guy to just put like a fish hook in my penis and then pull it back out. She would be like, what the fuck?
I think I've said this on a much earlier episode, which you could listen to probably in the random stream you have. But the principal disadvantage of getting your penis pierced is that you can't pee. Like, if you get the sort of the tip of it pierced,
yeah,
is you can't pee standing up anymore.
Right, because it sprays, right?
Right, so it's like you have to pee sitting down, so you lose one of your primary advantages as a male.
I would say the primary disadvantages is still being stabbed in the penis.
That's a temporary, I mean, that's a bad one, but it's certainly bad. I don't want to diminish that.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like every time you have to sit down, like squat and pee, you're like, oh, right.
Yeah.
I did this. I made this choice.
Yeah.
Like it would hurt. But it wouldn't hurt as much like a month later. But a month later, you're still squatting to pee and you're like, oh, right.
Haven't you ever been injured in such a way, though, that it like haunts you
to this day? I have a broken rib, so yes.
Yeah.
Like it's I sleep on it wrong and I wake up and I'm like, oh.
I'm talking about something that happened and like it doesn't hurt anymore. But you can still think about it and kind of remember it. And it's still, you're still like, oof.
I don't think I have anything like that.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I do, yeah. And I would say that.
I mean,
not
physically, maybe emotionally, but
the emotional scars,
right?
Ian, our scars remind us the past is real.
All right, That's deep, man. It's Papa Roach. You should put that into a song.
I think that's Papa Roach.
I think it is.
There was a kid at the library the other night who was there like towards the very end of my shift is when we were closing. And I was like, can I help you find something? And we had 2 minutes left. And he was looking for Linkin Park's Meteora.
Okay.
And I was just like, what an odd request in like 2016. Because I'm like, I don't know. That's like a 12-year-old album or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what a weird thing.
I mean, there's going to be a point where someone has to like, if you're programming an oldie station.
Yeah.
Someone's going to have to look at like a Papa Roach album and be like, do I put this
cut
on
my life? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is there someone out there looking for this to like relive? Because I remember like oldie songs tended to be like kind of happy, bouncy things.
Yeah.
I don't know if somebody who was like, who really loved that song when they were like 18.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Is going to feel the same way when they're like 65. They're not going to be as angsty. It's the challenge of having that angsty music of you're just not as angsty at 50 as you were at 17.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I guess it's hard to imagine. I mean, I know that people would say this about the Beatles, right?
Right.
I never thought I'd be in the elevator and hear the Beatles. But, like, I don't think I'm going to be in an elevator and hear Puddle of Mud. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen.
See, I've been in the grocery store and I've heard Puddle of Mud.
Why?
So I feel like I don't know.
Was it blurry?
Yes.
What grocery store were you in?
I was in a Safeway.
Okay.
But that's where I'm like, I don't know why this is here. You know, like it's incongruous where I'm like, it doesn't feel like background music.
I feel like if I was in the band Puddle of Mud and mm-hmm. heard Puddle of Mud in the grocery store, I'd be like, I don't know about this.
That feels like if you're a certain kind of artist, you failed. But if you're another kind of artist, you're like, I've succeeded. My music is just everywhere.
I don't even think it would be a failure to me as far as like, my music didn't do what it's intended. I think it would be like, I feel like whoever put this in the rotation is either fucking with everybody in a light way or didn't really know what this was.
Right.
Because it's not that it's like, you know, that I'm like, yeah, this shit's so hard. It's just that I feel like it doesn't make sense to grocery shop to this music to me at all.
No.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That was scheme number one for shelving books, Pete's big pile of books.
Yeah, Pete's pile of books. That's really the same theme song to Pete's dental update.
Yeah, they're all kind of the same. scheme number two was, come into the bookstore and ask me how the books are arranged.
Oh, so we're doing this as a role play?
Yeah.
All right. I'm opening the door.
Okay.
I'm closing it gently so as not to disturb the bookstore cat.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
All right, so I'm coming up to the counter. I'm kind of looking around. I got to check out. I don't know about this bookstore. Oh, boy. you're supposed to ask me if I need help with something.
No, that's not how my bookstore works.
Your bookstore doesn't work that way?
First of all.
Okay. So I have to come in and be like...
You have to come bother me.
All right. So I'm looking for a book.
Okay.
And I'm having a hard time getting through your bookstore. So could you kind of tell me how this is arranged?
Well, sure. Yeah. What are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for something by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Okay. Here's the deal.
Okay.
Our bookstore is arranged by best book first.
Okay.
And as they go towards the back, they get crappier.
Okay. So is it like categorized like the best Ta-Nehisi Coates book?
Nope.
And then the other ones are right after that?
Nope.
Oh.
No, it's, you know, okay.
Okay.
I got this book in my hand, right?
Right.
I put it on the shelf.
Okay.
It's the first one to go on the shelf. The next book I put on the shelf is either in front of it because it's better.
Okay.
Or behind it because it's worse.
So what happens if it's a tie?
There's like no the ties.
There's no ties. So
all
everything...
ties are broken.
Okay. So there's not like a pile of books that are all ties.
No.
And they're sort of, okay. So no, everything is ranked.
The very first book in the store is the very best book we have.
Okay.
And the very last one is the shittiest book that we have.
So you're always curious as to, like, at this point in this store, as a customer, I'm no longer interested in the Ta-Nehisi Coates book. Except
right.
Just trying to figure out, like, part of me wonders, like, where this book that I wanted is in this store.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to evaluate the store entirely based on where that book is.
Now, here's what I think, though. Wouldn't you then be compelled to look through the store and evaluate the store based on books you've already read?
Yes.
Because you haven't read this book in this scenario, right? Right. So, like, you can't really... I mean, you have an idea that it's probably good, but you don't know. So you have to... You'd have to just kind of start walking and see. I mean, everyone's either going to start at the beginning or the end, right?
Sure.
And then they'll see the best or the worst book and be like, what the fuck?
See, I imagine that, like, the end of the store will be collections of novelty books, like books intended as gifts.
Oh, sure.
Or, like... Things, and especially novelty books that are heroically out of date, like Best Jokes About Bob Dole.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, nobody wants this.
Yeah, but maybe I'm like, these are pretty good jokes.
There's a lot of material here.
You know, I didn't think they would go where they went, but they were fucking ruthless. And they were talking about what his dick looks like.
so somehow
crazy.
That's the kind of book that would get saved, because if that's like that's in the middle of the shop, you'd be like, wow, this is really kind of high ranked as a book.
You know what? I was gonna put it low, and then I flipped through and was like, you know,
you could be a real dick too and put all your blank journals at the end.
Yeah.
And be like,
Or at the beginning.
The best book is the book you're going to write.
Yeah.
Or you could be at the end and be like, the worst book is whatever gets put in this dumb journal.
Whatever some fuckface writes in here.
Right.
Yeah. And then the ones at the blank are they're at the beginning and the end. And then peppered throughout, because that's just confusing.
I think you almost have to put, if you're being honest, like you have to put all the blank books in the middle, like in the exact center.
No.
No, because like you say that it is a unwritten book better than a bad book. Maybe. At some point, basically, like all the journals can't be that far apart from each other.
Why not?
Unless there's like some other. I mean, that's the thing. I guess like the criteria would change from book to book.
See, this is exactly. So now like, you're getting it.
So there would be no stable criteria at all.
It's like. Total prognostication. Like, I pick up a book, I hold it in my hand, and decide whether it goes where it goes.
Now, see, I feel like for the system, I'm not going to say for it to work.
Because it doesn't work.
But to be consistent, right? Or to have something here.
Okay.
I need to be able to say, like, I want book. Like, if someone walks in and says, I want Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, book, like a new book, uh-huh. You'd be like, it's somewhere in the ranking. But if I say, I want 112... You have to pull out 112.
Absolutely.
And be like, here is 112.
Well, yeah.
Or if I say, you know, all right, I'm looking for...
No, see, I don't think I have to do that either. Because I think that, like, I'm like, you go do it. Just start counting at the beginning and count to 112.
Maybe you have to have, like, does it make the ranking? Because, like, if it's not there, is it worse? Is it better? Because if you have no criteria, right?
It's the same stock is carried at this bookstore/library, regardless of the shelving scheme.
Right. It's sort of saying it's the best book you have, not the best book there is.
Except sometimes, you know, maybe I'll do a month where I carry like only one book and I have like 10,000 copies. And it's like, you know,
you evaluated
Demolition Man, the novelization. Like, I get every copy of it that exists. And then
you evaluate each copy. It's still ranked.
Yes.
It's just ranked. Like,
yes.
Or really, what you do is
No, this is a different scheme. You remember how we had Pete's big pile of books?
Right.
Okay, that's like week one.
Okay.
Then we shut down for a week, reorganize, and we reopen with... ranked by best.
Can you make it like a month so then people get used to the scheme and then it's more traumatic when it changes?
Maybe.
Because if it changes every week, people are just going to be like, I'll just wait until a scheme that makes sense comes along.
But don't you think
which is a fool's errand.
Will keep coming back to see like what kind of wacky shit is going on this week? You know, like I just, okay, we're closed Sunday.
Right.
And I basically have somebody come and rearrange the entire store every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then people start coming in because they're like, who knows what shit's happening this week? I have no fucking idea.
I thought you were going to have a scheme where it's like biographical, not autobiographical, where if they know you, they could figure out where something is.
Uh-huh.
You just say it's biographical and it's arranged by, and like, well, based on whom you say, I don't know, biographical.
No, they have to have an explainable method.
I guess the ranking is kind of explainable.
It's totally explainable.
It's that one book is ranked
the
high.
Best book is at the front of the store, and the worst book is in the back.
Okay.
And each one is in order of how good it is.
Fair enough. There is a system.
There's a system.
All right.
Okay. This one my coworkers helped me develop,
okay.
And I came to it because you were talking about the airport, the baggage claim.
All right.
Basically, you set up a baggage claim that runs throughout the entire store. You dump all the books on it, and then when you come to shop in the bookstore, you don't have to fucking walk around all the time.
It's sort of every book will come to you eventually.
You just stand there and wait until something catches your eye,
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it comes through and you take it.
So that's also where it would be fun if you had the, like, thousands of copies of Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Just in the middle, and there's just a big pile of Demolition Mans that roll around the conveyor belt.
See, and I'm picturing, yeah, so you'd have, like, exactly like the airport set up. You know, and periodically through the day, other ones come rolling up from the basement.
Right.
Where are they coming from? I don't know.
This bookstore has to have a basement for this to work.
Or a ceiling, ceiling, hidden, like, whatever.
It has to have some kind of
hopper up there.
Right.
Periodically dumps out. And it's got a screen, too, that says, you know, where incoming lots of books are from.
Incoming.
Just, and it's total bullshit, you know.
It's just... But,
flight whatever from wherever, and then starts rolling in.
It's just the name of the trucking company each time,
and then
which has no connection to anything.
There's announcements, you know, like the blue zone is for this. I have
check the book to make sure that it's yours.
I get those carts that you can rent for 25 cents,
mm-hmm.
And get a whole thing of those, put them in the parking. You have to park in a lot, like across town, and take a bus over.
You can get rid of your stock at days by, like, if you have, you know, 25 cents for all the books that you can carry without going to your car.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make it from there to your house without a vehicle.
This would be good.
Yeah.
I think I'd have a fire sale.
As many
where
books.
I literally start a fire and they're slowly being conveyed into the fire. And it's like, if you can rescue it from the conveyance before it gets in the fire, you know, it's half off.
Mm-hmm.
Some shit like that.
It's half off at a certain point in the conveyor belt, but right before the fire, it's twice as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a board game. Yeah, see, this is what I want to do. I think that a bookstore should do this.
It's kind of like...
Because I think it brings back the idea. It's like extreme browsing.
Can I modify this idea slightly?
Maybe.
With a different option?
Sure.
I remember as a kid, we used to go to this restaurant...
With
a little train that came around.
Yes.
So I thought, like, maybe you could put your antique books or, like, a couple of things on there and just comes around a little model train.
Now, see, this is another month.
Ah.
You set up an entire little model town with trains. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The books are on fucking trains. You know, or, like, somebody fills out a little card of, like, what kind of book do I want to read? And they send it to the back, and then a train comes out with a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, fuck you, that's your book.
It's just, like, one book, please.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because at this restaurant, you get, like, hot dogs. It was like a diner, except along the diner counter, a train would come,
mm-hmm.
and have, like, hot dogs and fries. So, like, yeah, you would just order that shit, and then it would come out.
Or it's like, have you ever been to a sushi restaurant with a, like, conveyor belt?
Yes.
Yeah. It could be like that, and it's just, you don't know what you're going to get. You know how much it costs, and that's it.
But that's basically the conveyor, the airport conveyor, you know.
It's a change in pricing, where basically it's the airport conveyor with clear pricing, so you don't want to do that. Your systems are about being obtuse and strange.
Yes.
Not about being helpful.
No. This isn't about walking away with a book that you wanted to buy. This is like an ongoing, dare I say, art project.
I almost want to say, like, you know, the very last week you have of the bookstore is like an escape room.
Okay.
Basically, where you have to, like, solve puzzles all the time. And when you open instead of getting a clue, sometimes you get a book. And it's like, hey, you win. That's your book.
Yeah. Or like a saw scenario.
Well, sure. That's the very last day because you got to skip town after that.
Okay. Here's another one I'd like. I'd like they come in one week and every book you open has a cutout in it and has a gun inside. Or, you know, let's just say it has an object in it. Every book has, you know, something in it in a perfectly cut out little
It's perfectly section. Manufactured, and sometimes it's something ominous, like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it's something like pretty, like a rubber duck.
Yeah, or like one time it's like a nude Polaroid of someone who you're like, I'm not sure this person knows they were being photographed.
But also there's like a way too big cutout for it.
Yeah.
So it's like clearly like there's a bunch, there's space for lots of photographs, but there's only the one. So you're like,
yes,
is this the only one?
So this is another one of my eccentric millionaire ideas, is to open this business.
Bookstore. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome.
I'm calling it a business. But
this experience, really.
I think the best part
it's not really a bookstore because you have to sell books for that.
I think the best part of opening this business is to then, you know, when people are telling me, like, you should do it like this or that, you'll sell more books, to act completely perplexed. You're like, what are you talking about?
But why?
Every bookstore does it like this. Right,
this is how we've always done it. Yeah. Even though it's like, no, you did something different last week, and you should just be completely clueless.
Be like, what do you mean?
What do you mean last week?
I don't think that's...
I've come in every day, and it's been this big pile of books.
Well, you know what I'll do is I'll totally rename the bookstore every week. So I'll be like, you're thinking of, you know, Pete's Bookatorium. This is Pete's Book Shack.
The Reading Railroad.
Yeah.
It's like, why would I call this the Reading Railroad? Clearly all of these books are arranged by rank.
Also, they say it Reading.
Right.
Duh. Now get out. If you just came here to complain about some other fantasy store you went to,
right?
I don't have time for that. I'm running a business.
This isn't some kind of jungle bookstore out in the middle of nowhere.
Books aren't going to arrange themselves by goodness by themselves. It's a pretty complicated system.
It's whoever I pay on Sunday to do that.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right.
Did you have another thing?
I had a topic that maybe would be good to save for another day.
Oh, okay.
I think. It was actually about human skull parts.
Okay.
Where it refers to another podcast, and it was a conversation I was having with my girlfriend.
Okay.
Who may be a guest on the show. In the near future, listeners.
Let's hope.
Yeah. But she was listening to a podcast where another couple was having a dispute about whether or not the husband could purchase a human skull.
Mm.
And like could display it in the house.
Okay.
And it talked about the responsible sourcing of a human skull.
Oh, is there such a thing?
Apparently there is. Like there's a whole bunch of laws around how you can source a skull. Like there's sort of like heirloom skulls,
mm-hmm.
which you don't really know where they came from originally, but they're like 100 years old or 200 years old. So it's not as if whoever died had died a long time ago.
Right.
But there's a lot of skulls that are not responsibly sourced.
Okay.
So it's unclear if they came, like if they were harvested for the purposes of selling skulls, or if it's like a Chinese prisoner who was, you know, murdered and then their skull was harvested.
No.
And the profits go to the Chinese government.
Is that a thing?
Like
I could buy a Chinese prison skull?
I don't think it's probably is. I mean, that's where like that Bodyworks exhibit sometimes gets into a little trouble because they got some of their early donations from China, and it's not exactly clear how well those were sourced.
Mm.
Like the sort of some people accused Bodyworks of using a bunch of prisoners.
I think you're thinking of Body Worlds.
Body Worlds, yeah.
Body Works is a soap store.
Also, they could
made
also
out
be
of dead Chinese people.
It probably is.
Okay, wait. So this couple, first of all, is
right.
arguing about whether the husband is like, I want to have a skull.
Yes.
Why?
He likes skulls.
Is he just like one of these metal, you know?
He's into like taxidermied animals and taxidermied okay. things. And so he feels like a skull would be kind of the pinnacle of a collection, right?
Okay.
Like he sort of talked about like he wanted to have, you know, if you have like rats or mice or you have their bones and things.
Sure.
You know, wouldn't having a human skull be sort of, if you were into bones generally, like a human skull would be the most, like a sort
it.
Of a peak of a collection.
That's the crowning right? jewel yeah. of a sort of,
it's an
like,
amazing fantasy 15 of bones.
It's an oddities collection.
Right.
And that's kind of the ultimate. Now, the reason I asked was because I'm assuming that this husband is not, this is not like a brand new
obsession
field of interest for
it's
him.
It's not like, right? He woke up one day and it's like, you know, I want skulls in my house.
Yeah, he's not just like George Lucas or something.
Right.
Where I imagine his house is full of Star Wars shit and one day he's just like, I think I'd like to have a human skull. And his wife is like,
I don't know. You have to get rid of one. You have to get rid of one X-wing for every skull you have.
Yeah, like let's talk about our friend Alec, right?
Okay,
he's got a bunch of comic book shit.
Yeah,
he's got some statues.
Yes.
Now
mini busts. Yeah.
Yes. Now if he was like, I want to get this or that mini bust, you know, and let's say it was a mini bust that for some reason was like not as appropriate in some way. I don't know how.
Okay, so it's an really inappropriate mini bust.
Yeah, it would be like, well, that fits in with his collection. You know what I mean? He can make a pretty strong argument, since he has like hundreds of these, that it's like, it's part of the larger collection. It's a drop in the bucket.
It's like Marvel has a mini bust of of Crossbones.
Okay.
But it's made of actual human bone.
Okay.
So like, let's make the scenario more concrete. But yeah.
And so, however, if Alec was to say, I want to just have a human skull out of nowhere.
The red skull. That would be the perfect one to have a skull,
yes.
Right?
And they're like, it's made out, the skull on the red
it's
skull.
It's made out
thing.
Of a baby skull to be the right size. No. Yeah, it's got to match.
Well, no.
The sizing of everything else.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Because we're conflating two things.
Okay.
He wants a red skull one, right?
Right.
And let's say the red skull is slightly objectionable because the red dye is made of blood.
Okay.
Stan Lee dies.
Right.
And they decide to make it out of his blood.
They drain his blood for money.
That's what his final wish was.
It's not even his final wish. Make it his, like, they just did it.
No.
No? Okay.
It's his final wish. It's fine.
Okay.
You know, it's, the issue isn't really, in this case,
the sourcing.
Ethics of the skull. It's the allowing of the skull to be in the home.
Right.
Because
it's the,
somebody is,
you've got a blood-soaked thing, a blood-soaked statue in your house.
His wife is looking at this from the perspective in this scenario of, I don't really want a skull with an old man's blood painting it. And that's a very fair stance.
It's sort of it's a reasonable stance to say, I'm willing to, it's not saying I don't want any of these mini busts here.
Yeah.
Because we could say that maybe that's not a terribly reasonable stance either, but it's saying I'm drawing the line at the one painted in human blood.
Yes. Now, here's what I'm saying.
Right.
There's the one painted in human blood. He wants it. She doesn't, right? In that scenario, I feel like he's not totally wrong. And the reason being, the collection justifies what's going on.
Right.
And that's why I was asking, what's this guy into? Because here's the other thing. If Alec was to just be like, I have all these mini busts, now I want a human skull.
Right.
That would be like a fuck no.
There's
no discussion.
It's not in the pattern.
No.
Right.
And it would be like, why do you want that? Why all of a sudden? It's like, I just do. It'd be like, no.
It's he had the mini busts before he got married.
It's like, I have one of Stan Lee's teeth.
Right. He had the mini bust before he got married. So, you know, in getting married, his wife probably signed on for the mini busts.
That's what I was getting
at.
Did this wife, who the husband's getting the skull, I'm assuming this wife married this man knowing that he was in this realm.
It's into taxidermy stuff, definitely.
Yeah.
Like taxidermy, articulated skeletons of animals and things.
Okay, so then that's question A. Now, what was his argument pro-skull, and what was her argument anti-skull, if there was an argument beyond it's a skull?
So I didn't hear the whole argument, but I think his argument was he wanted it and it looks cool.
Okay.
Her argument was, no.
It's a skull.
It's a skull. I don't want it. I think her problem was not so much that she didn't want him to own it.
Yeah.
She just didn't want it displayed.
Now, see, this is something I think is very crucial to happy relationships. If you move into a house or a thing, you know, with somebody, right?
Right.
You just got to decide who's going to decide what different parts of the house look like.
Right.
So, you know, if I want my house to look like my apartment right now, I need to have a room to do that. And if Poonmaster Flex is decorating the living room, it's going to be Poonmaster Flex's living room.
Right.
It can't be this weird mishmash of, like, you know, it's got Poon Master Flex and she's got these nice printed pictures she took in Hawaii.
Right.
And then a skull.
There's a bit of incongruity there.
It's not going to be a Dr. Octopus action figure.
Right.
You know, dangling off of her ceramic diffuser of essential oils. Like, that's not going to work.
Or it's going to work perfectly. You could have him holding up the diffuser with his 8 arms.
See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. To me, that's great.
Right.
To her, that is not great. Having that happen ruins her thing.
That having Dr. Octopus hold her diffuser makes it work less good.
So the argument about having it like in the living room,
right?
I'm on the wife's side.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also on the husband's side in that it's like, if your husband is into this taxidermy bullshit, he just needs a fucking creepy room that he puts that stuff in.
He needs the bone collector room.
Yeah.
It's the kind of room that you lock off generally.
Yeah.
And like when your husband has had too many whiskey sours,
yeah,
he's like, you want to see my bone room?
Well, and he can just like hang out in there and be weird. Also, you remember in Beetlejuice,
okay,
they're redecorating the house.
Right.
And the dad is upstairs in this like office type room,
mm-hmm,
and is just like, how about we leave this room as it is? And his wife is like, okay. And I was like, that was a healthy marriage right there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a healthy like... her saying, like, decorating a house is my thing, but I have the entire house. And he's like, can we just have one room that is my normal room? And she's like, all right.
Let's just not have... because she wanted to put up... for those of you who didn't see Beetlejuice...
fuck yourself.
Yeah. The wife is sort of a artist, very into, like, postmodern art.
Yeah.
And the weirder, the better.
Yeah, I mean, and they transform this house...
yeah.
...into, like, a... modern art museum, basically.
Exactly. And so he was like, can I have one room that we just don't go nuts in? Like,
traditional.
He's not asking like to change anything. He's like, this is fine. Just leave this room as it is.
How about we leave this room? And she's like, all right. That's what they need. Mm-hmm. This is what will save this relationship. Now let's talk about...
That house in Beetlejuice, because I'm pretty sure that's what Tim Burton's house was actually like.
No, let's talk about the skull some more.
Okay.
So then they talked about, like, legitimate sourcing of a skull.
Right.
Now, the only, in my mind, the only way that works is basically, let's say I had an illness.
Right.
And I knew I was not long for this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what if you pay me $5,000 now? And then when I die, you can have my skull.
I think the rules are that you can't do that because you can't sell your body parts.
Even after you're dead.
Right, because it's sort of like you can't sell your organs.
But that's not like a usable body part.
It's not usable to us, but...
well, who's the skull usable to?
Med students.
Well, fuck them.
I think that's
how
where
come
some...
I can give it to them, but I can't sell it
I
to
I think that's
else.
Where the responsible sourced ones come from is like once medical schools are done with it.
Yeah.
Then they're like, well, we got to get rid of it so we can...
see, this is... I don't like this.
Right.
This is these elite doctor types who think
future
they
doctor
can just
types.
Take my skull and cut it all open and shit and then sell it to somebody. You know, they got to be making money off both ends.
Or they got to get it for free and then sell it later.
Yeah. That's fucked up. I don't agree with that.
I don't know if that's the way it works. I'm not sure actually if there is a good way to responsibly source skulls anymore. Like most of the ones that I heard that were responsibly sourced were what were called heirloom skulls, where basically the origin is lost to history.
So it's like if I went up in like a great grandpa's attic
and
there's
a
fucking skull in
right.
there and I'm just like, well, I don't know. Like, who the fuck knows where this came from? Although I still think you could probably... I saw this like little movie about these people who they are in the... so in World War II in mm-hmm. Japan, you know, the American soldiers who went there would take flags and shit like that,
right.
souvenirs, swords, whatever. And they're kind of doing this project of returning those objects to the families of the people who died.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get a flag back to some family of some Japanese guy who died like 70 years ago, I feel like you could return a skull to some semblance of something where it belongs.
And some of that like sourcing stuff gets a little weird because sometimes like the skull was a slave.
Yeah.
And you're like, you can't, it's hard to like say, well, you know, find the family of that, but it's like, maybe you shouldn't hang on to it. Like, I don't know who owns it, but you definitely don't.
Yeah. Like this is a crazy question.
Right.
But like, they can like, can they look at a skull and tell, you know, things like what race the person was?
I heard with race you could.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay.
But I, that sounds like almost like, I remember seeing that in a science class once, but it sounds like one of those like phrenology kind of things.
I know,
yeah,
that's
I'm like,
why I
don't
asked.
Know.
But then on the other hand, I was like, well, I don't know. They can tell some things from this shit, you know, from your genetics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think you kind, I mean, I remember like hearing that on the crime shows, which you talked about in a very early episode.
Okay.
Where they had some kind of idea of like, okay, this is sort of this kind of skull or that kind of skull. But
oh, they, yeah, they said on a show, they said that a skull was a Negroid skull.
Right.
Which I was like,
I mean, it's possible that you could look at a skull and then get like a probability to be like, no. It's.
Yeah, that's yeah. What they said. And they also said mongoloid.
Right.
To mean like, I think Mongolian. Mm. Or of that
or like
area?
Of Asian or like yeah
and I kind of was like I guess these are like medical terms left over from you know
a
just
much more racist
them.
Era yeah
but it was pretty weird to see oh hang on
oh,
let me
you gotta
silence
get the phone.
My telemophone
oh yeah this is Snake come in this is Snake Colonel we gotta find the nukes what nukes the big ones in Alaska.
The nuclear bomb nukes. Right. Anyway, yeah, it was weird to see on a show, mm-hmm. even at that time, because I was like, And also, I was like, maybe that is the accurate term, but do these things need to be that accurate? Like, I watching this show am more surprised at this term
right.
than I would have been if they'd used the incorrect term.
I mean, I guess there's got to be somebody like you pull out a skeleton and you have a rough, you have like no idea who it is.
Yeah.
You have to be like, well, you can kind of guess like if it's a man or a woman.
You can
kind of guess the age.
I'm going to ask Google.
I like that you have, the first thing I see in one of your other tabs is a BuzzFeed quiz.
Yeah.
Where it's asking when No Scrubs came out.
Can you tell a person's race from his skull? Slate. Not my favorite, but let's just do this.
It's a top ranked by the Googles.
I just want it. Oh God. Help us hold Trump accountable. We're Slate.
So it's asking.
They ruled out a missing Alabama team.
They've certainly changed to make it very clickbaity of can you tell a person's race by their skull? Read the article.
They say, can you really determine race from a jawbone? Probably not.
So a jawbone by itself, the answer is no.
Jawbone is one of the more useful bone measurements. Racial classification is an inexact science, duh. They say a bone is consistent with European ancestry or likely of Asian ancestry. And its practitioners say it takes years of experience to achieve mastery since you have to see piles and piles of disembodied mandibles. This is just talking about a jawbone. While today's forensic anthropologists don't like to talk about it, the discipline has its roots in pseudoscientific 19th century past, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, so it is phrenology.
But the methodology has improved since then. When researchers develop a hypothesis about racial variation, they conduct blind tests on hundreds or thousands of skulls known ancestry to test its reliability. They also test their own consistency, looking at the same skull several times in different orders to make sure they usually make the same call on its structures and shapes. There are people who think the modern techniques are bunk. They argue that more physical variability exists between individuals of the same race than between races and point out that less than 15% of physical variation can be attributed to race. In addition, marriage between people of differing ancestries has become so common. Well, yeah, duh.
So it sounds kind of like it's enough that you could have a crappy mystery novel that uses that as a point, but probably not something you'd want to hold up in a court of law.
It seems like here's what I'm taking from this. It's possible to make an educated guess from like a skull.
It's possible that you can kind of, you can have it sort of work in your existing theory or not. Where it's like if you're saying, okay, we think this person who is an African-American was likely buried here and you find the skeleton and then it's an African-American skeleton, you're saying, okay, then the rest of our stuff adds up. But if you found a skeleton and it was not, it doesn't disprove it, but it's like maybe something else is going on.
Well, and I would say also what this indicates to me is that this is probably less useful in modern application.
Right.
But if you found a skull from like the 1600s, you could probably make
a much better guess.
A better guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you found a skull buried in a place where there is a plantation,
yeah,
and it was like, yeah,
you're gonna take a while. It's not gonna be too hard to figure out.
Sounds like they're saying this would be like a possible corroborative piece of evidence, as opposed to a main hypothesis.
It doesn't prove anything, but it sort of acts in support of with others. Like if you had other evidence pointing to like, well, this is where he was last seen, this is where this happened. Doesn't prove it by itself, but can help support a theory rather than prove a theory.
Maybe I need to get my sort of my name or something like etched into my skull. Maybe that's the answer. Because then, or in my jawbone. Well, see, if they found my jawbone, I think they would. I don't know.
Maybe like you have to have it etched in both places in case, like, you know, you lose your jaw.
I have to have it edged everywhere.
Right. In each bone.
And tattooed.
If found, return to Peter Dirk. And every time you change addresses, you have to get multiple surgeries.
Yeah. Like I make you my emergency contact. And then I'm like, don't you fucking change your phone number.
I have to have this phone number no matter what.
Yeah, and then it changes to be an Arby's or something. And I'm like, you dumb bastard.
Of course, then they're like, oh, Arby's, free meat, done. How do you think they make their roast beef sandwiches in such good bone broth? Human bones.
Okay, so here's why that was important, right? Because we're talking about ethically sourcing a skull.
Right.
But basically, what that tells me is it would be very difficult to know the race of the skull.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, it would be very difficult, let's say, if you got a skull that was allegedly from a, you know, white woman who died of natural causes, donated her skull to science, and then sold it, versus a skull that was from a Chinese prisoner.
Right.
Like, it would be very difficult.
It'd be very unlikely that you could determine the point of origin.
Yeah, it would be hard to say, you know, especially because once you had the skull, that sort of corroborating evidence is gone.
It's really what I think how the heirloom skulls kind of work, where they're like, we can't prove, it's old enough that we don't, whatever crime was involved in getting this skull was unclear. I mean, a lot of what the podcast had talked about was not that it doesn't necessarily come from murder, but more likely from grave robbing.
Yeah.
Like that's the more likely thing, where basically you go into the graveyard, steal a bunch of skulls.
Well, or like, okay, let's say something happens like they had all that flooding in New Orleans, right?
Right.
And they're saying like, well, there are caskets and bodies around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe like a casket pops out because the ground gets all, you know, it's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Casket comes floating down the street. And, you know, maybe somebody just kind of wakes up and there's like a goddamn skeleton in their yard. And they're like, well, I could keep this skull.
Right.
Like it's kind of up to me. No one's going to know.
They're not going to be like, where's the head?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be like, there's a fucking hurricane that knocked this guy's casket out of the ground. And you're asking, it seems almost like you'd have to take more bones and like scatter them around to cover up your crime.
Well, you know what else I was reading is I think it was Rembrandt. I can't remember. It was some painter and he died. No, it was Bach.
Right.
And he dies, right? And then his wife decides to visit his grave. But it turns out like at this time, visiting a grave was not a common practice.
Okay.
You just buried somebody and that was that. But for whatever reason, she decided to go to the graveyard. Well, he wasn't there anymore because they basically turned over the graves every 7 years.
Oh yeah.
They would like dig that motherfucker up. I don't know what the fuck they did.
There's
with
a, like there's a like there's some rules about that, like where you can turn like after a certain amount of time, like you can reuse a grave.
Yeah, so I mean there's gotta be bones coming up from that, right?
I mean that's like old medical students used to do grave robbing so they'd have cadavers to work on.
Yeah.
It's part of why like the donation to science thing became easier to do, so that way it's sort of like saying these people don't care, so let them donate their body to science rather than like go have them commit crimes to get cadavers.
So what are the ethics of buying a skull, knowing what we've guessed now?
I think part
which
of
is like, okay, to me this whole heirloom skull thing doesn't right. sound a lot more legitimate than, you know, buying a quote-unquote new skull. Because it's like, I mean, that's just as likely to have been a skull that someone shouldn't have, if not more so, because it, you know, it, there was a time when you could just have a skull.
It's kind of a thing where I think when you come to the ethics of it, there's the, there's almost nothing, like, it, there's not too much wrong with an individual transaction, right? Like, if you sell your skull,
yeah,
there's no, you know, you're assuming you're, like, you have to not be murdered by the person buying your skull.
Yeah.
But basically, like, it's not clear who's hurt in this transaction.
Right.
The problem is if you create a market for skulls,
then it's... you got to keep up with the demand.
Right. But that's where you start to get at the things like grave robbing becomes more tempting. Mm. If there's a market for human skulls,
yeah,
you know, it's part of why, like, where heirloom skulls is the idea of, like, heirloom skulls are kind of like NES cartridges and that there's not going to be more of them.
Okay. But there will.
There will.
Because someone, if I had a skull that I got today.
Right, you could say you got it.
It's just out at the dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I keep it hidden away and no one ever finds it, you know, then some kid like 50 years from now finds it in the attic. Well, that's, for all they know, I've had it for 100 years before that. You know,
like,
what
you
mean?
Don't know where. I see that on a certain practical level.
Yeah.
But you make the heirloom market for heirloom skulls just to make the market a little less accessible, like a little harder. In that you have to do some subterfuge to sell a skull. You can't just be like, I got this on eBay.
Right.
You know, it's not saying that you make the, you don't have to make the system bulletproof.
Right.
You just have to make it a little harder to sell a human skull so that way someone who's toying with the idea is not like, you know, like, you know, I think I'll pass.
Now, what do you think about this? What would you say the ethics are? Let's say I was like, you know what? There's a market here.
Right.
Okay. You've got your death metal bands. You've got your fucking weirdos who want to put it on the mantle.
You've got people who want a really intimidating pencil holder.
What do you think the ethics are of me? Let's say this is another eccentric millionaire idea.
Right.
I start a business where I buy people's skulls from them while they're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then sell them. And, you know, I guess I set up my business in another country.
Okay.
Where they have laws about, or let's say there's a state where they don't have these stringent laws, right?
Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just assume Nevada is like, we can do whatever the hell we want with our skulls.
Right.
Or Montana. Where they're like, it's my skull and you'll take it out of my cold, dead hand.
You'll take
like,
it off of my cold, dead spinal cord. And you're like, well, exactly.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Right.
Do you think that's bad to do? Because my personal beliefs, obviously, are, you know, when you're dead, your body's just a pile of flesh. So who fucking cares? Like, I'm like, I don't know. You can just shove a pole in my ass and parade me down the road. Like, what's the difference?
I
will be dead. I won't know.
I think it's okay as long as it's not... I have a problem with that if it's like selling kidneys.
Yeah, I'm,
you know,
not talking,
I think,
about
like,
when
if
you're
it's
alive.
Or if it's a life-saving thing, right? Like, it's basically saying... Because if you're creating a system where like someone has to buy your skull to not die...
Sure.
Or like to save their kid's life or whatever it is, I can see that as an ethical difference.
But that's not a thing.
Right.
This is the thing. It's not like they're like, well, we gave this person a skull implant.
Right.
You know, that doesn't exist.
As long as skull implants don't exist, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems kind of like, if you're an eccentric millionaire, you're weird, but you're sort of like, you're giving somebody a little bit of money for something that improves their life a little bit.
Yeah.
The person to whom you sell it. The thing is, like, you'd have to have a system of, like, blind selling. Like, you go to somebody and say, like, when a skull comes up, you know, you're going to get the skull you get. you don't get to pick your skull.
Why not?
So that way they have no incentive to be like, well, I kind of want my skull now, so I'm going to track this person down.
Oh, well, I wouldn't be like, Ian sold me his skull, so when he dies, you get it.
Right.
I would have to, you know, you have to build up a stock, and then they could just look through the gallery of ones I already had.
That's fine. Like, but you no, can't, they, you no, have to be like, be it's like, not the,
well, that's worthless, because right. then, if, you know, you're waiting for a skull. It's like, well, what if this dude's like 3 years older than you? You know what I mean? You're only going to get to enjoy your skull for a very short time.
Well, it's saying like you have a waiting list, right? And you never get to know who's on. Like, in other words, the...
No, you
the,
don't get to know like
the buyers, like the buyers and sellers
skull.
Have to be like in totally separate lists. Like, you, if you're, yeah. Yeah, if you're a buyer, you don't get to see the list of who it is.
No, absolutely not.
Now, would you sort these lists by like this pile? Would you put them all in a pile or would you sort them by best to worst? Or would
the
you?
Skull is the best. It has one gold tooth, which I think really adds a piratey feel.
It could be he could be a pirate. He could be a gangster of some kind.
Let me ask this dark question.
All right,
your baby dies.
Okay,
and it, you know it's your baby. Right. It dies. It's like
baby,
2 weeks
baby,
old.
Baby, no.
Well, I don't know. When do their skulls turn fused?
So we'll call it a fused skull baby.
Yeah, okay. That's why it died. Its okay. skull is too early.
Okay.
And it's dead.
It pinched its brain off.
Can you keep your baby skull?
I remember that story of like Rick Santorum when his wife had a miscarriage.
And they took pictures like with the dead baby.
Yeah, and they kind of cuddled with it. So yeah. Like there's something where you can get the, you know, do you think like they bought it or they just got to keep it or like they checked it out like a library system? Like it's like you got to return this dead fetus.
I don't know. Like I don't know. But could you keep it?
I mean,
could
I guess.
Could you keep it on your mantle?
I think there's a kind of thing about like when you get the remains, you own them.
Yeah.
So you can kind of do mostly what you want with them, but you can't like. Chop off the head and throw the rest in a dumpster.
I'm not saying that.
Like, I mean, there's limits on what
I'm
you can do.
Not saying I would embalm the body myself.
And I do.
I'm saying
I've heard enough.
The baby
interview.
Dies. I take it to the hospital, right? And then I'm like, okay, well, for our purposes, we'd like to conduct the service. We'd like to have the full skeleton, you know. And then it's kind of like, where are you burying the baby? And I'm like, we are not. We are keeping the skeleton.
I think there's something where, like, the hospital...
This is yeah. Halloween.
So I think, basically, my guess is the hospital will, like, give you the remains, and then you'd have to extract the skeleton yourself.
You think so?
I don't think they're going to do that for you.
I don't think the hospital
be...
does, but, like, a funeral home.
I mean, I think it's, like... I've heard enough podcasts with taxidermists where they always say they won't taxidermy people.
Sure.
So it's somebody has the ability to do that. So I don't know if there's any law that prevents you from extracting your baby skeleton and
yeah.
using it as a Halloween decoration.
Well, okay. Here's why it's a question to me.
Right.
What's the difference other than visual of having, let's say, a jar of your baby's cremains versus its skull in that same jar? What is the difference?
I think it's aesthetics more than anything else. Especially if you like put the jar in a window and it's backlit. That's pretty badass.
Those jars are not see-through. I'm not talking about like a ball jar. I mean like, you know, an urn.
Oh, I don't see that there's much of a difference there.
Yeah, I don't either. Like if you open the urn and you just like, oh my God, there's still an entire skull in here.
Well, I mean, you're obviously a little pissed.
Would you be pissed? That was my question. Because I'm like, well, who fucking cares?
I'd be a little... I definitely write that crematorium a bad Yelp review because they didn't finish the dodge job.
Lazy assholes.
Yeah, like they did not do the work.
I opened this thing. There's an entire skull in here.
I mean, it's sort of like if you go to a steak restaurant and you ask for it well done, which is, you know, not the good way to get a steak, but then they serve it to you rare. You're like, no, what the fuck is this? I wanted this burned beyond recognition and you gave it to me still with a face.
It's like that.
I can still see his mother's eyebrows.
It's like that in as much as...
They've grown longer.
It's only like that in as much as these are both customer service experiences
where exactly.
you did not get what you wanted.
Right.
But one is your baby's skull and the other is a food.
Yes, I wanted a service.
A food that didn't come out to your preference.
I wanted My baby wasn't cooked to my preference either.
Well,
I just wasn't going to intend to eat it, but
I just,
still,
you know,
it's
I'm
the
just
same
curious
thing.
About, you know, I'm fairly certain they would tell you no. You know, even if I was like, I got this nice lucite domed thing with it's lit underneath.
It's very tasteful.
It's going to look like fucking Hellboy. It's going to be awesome. I think they'd still say no. But I feel like, you know, whatever. Like, why?
They would definitely send you to counseling. You could pass it off as like, I'm a grieving parent. This is part of my grieving process.
I grieve different than you.
You just need to find a therapist to sign off on it.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's fine. I don't know. I just think you should be able to do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, you can do this with your dog.
Sure.
Absolutely, right?
I've also heard the taxidermist interviews where they don't really like doing pets. But basically, if they said, like, you're just going to pull the skull out, they'd be like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Oh. So if I went to one of these taxidermists and I just had a dead dog and I was like, I want to keep the skull, they'd be like, radical. And they would just do it.
Yeah.
That's not a weird request to them.
No.
Okay.
Because people do that with, like, any animals they kill where they don't want, like, the whole head.
Yeah, but it's
they
different
just want, like,
because
a skull.
If I bring in a dead deer, that's different because I didn't like live with that guy
right.
for 10 years.
Well, that's why they don't do like
I didn't walk with him. I didn't see his boner.
It's why they don't do that's why they don't
pick up his shit in bags.
That's why they don't taxidermy pets because it's sort of saying like they'll never get it right. Like they'll never get the look.
They don't do it because it's not lifelike.
Right.
Not because they're like, no, that's really weird to have a corpse of your old dog.
It's the idea of you can make a bear look like it was like it's alive.
Because I don't really know.
You don't have a relationship with this bear. Yeah. You're like you saw it once when you shot it.
Sure.
And so it just has to look like a bear.
It's like if somebody you know, suddenly had a glass eye.
Right.
You would know.
And it's the
immediately.
Like, you can't make your dog look you can make it look like a dog, but not your dog.
I get that. I get why they don't do that. It's because, you know, they don't have the skills and abilities. I just don't know why. I don't understand the line where it's like not even a little weird to give you your dog's skull back, but it would be insane to give you
a baby,
your grandpa's skull back.
Your grandpa's skull.
Yeah.
I guess the
that
baby's
would be fucking
your baby,
crazy.
Your baby's skull is a little bit insane.
I guarantee you there are a lot of people in this world who are closer to their dog than they are to their grandpa.
It does kind of seem like you could have an older person where it's just their time.
And what if your grandpa was like an old asshole? And so you're sort of like, I mean, I'm not really emotionally attached to this.
Right.
I do want a skull. What the fuck?
I guess I don't see a problem with it. I think it's just the problem of creating a market for skulls. It's the sort of like, basically, I want to discourage grave robbing. I mean, that might be a controversial position here on Helpful Snowman. It might put me out of step.
Yeah.
Out of the normal boundaries.
Let me just say.
But I am against grave robbing. Grave robbing is not okay.
Maybe you should take your commie pinko bullshit somewhere else. This is a capitalist show. And you're like, I'm worried about creating a market for a product. What the hell?
I'm worried about creating a market for grave robbing. I'm worried about creating a criminal encouraging criminal enterprise.
I'm worried that a small business owner may thrive. You know, Joseph Ian Stalin.
make America rob graves again.
Yeah. Make America grave again. Oh, that would have been a great Halloween hat.
Oh,
Damn it.
Yeah.
Now it's too late.
Actually, we're going to have 4 more years, so you can still come back to it.
I have to tell you real quick, because it's Christmas, and there were two things I considered buying for our mom.
Right.
Or just fabricating that I had bought for her.
Mm-hmm.
If you donated like $1,000
right.
to Trump, you could get your name etched in this like donor wall at Trump Tower.
Oh, God.
And I was like, sitting there with Poodmaster Flex, and I was like, how fucked up would it be if I got that for my mom for Christmas? And I'd be like, your name will forever be etched into the wall. And then the other one was they have like the Make America Great Again hat ornament, which is like $80. And I was like, that would be the most fucked up thing. Not as good as etching her name in the wall. Because I was like, I mean, if I did that, let's say I did that.
Okay.
kind of the ultimate white elephant.
Yeah.
What would your reaction be on Christmas Day?
Like if I got it or if mom?
No, I give it to our mom. And you're just sitting there. You're kind of the third party in this situation.
Like, I think with the hat ornament still has a sense of humor to it.
Yeah.
This has like a big sense of permanence. And I'd be like, oh my God. Like, I feel like that's the kind of wall.
It's a card with a picture of me standing next to where her name is pointing. Thumbs up.
It feels like it's the kind of artifact that maybe this is a bit exaggerating and political again, but it feels like the kind of thing that could show up in like a Holocaust museum someday of like a wall of guilt. It's used as evidence in some kind of trial.
People,
look at your shame.
I'd be like, I am going to demand that we put an asterisk by my mom's name.
Like, this is a joke.
A little note that it was like, this was purely a joke gone wrong.
This was a white elephant gift. Like, you have to do that at the point of purchase. Or, like, at some point to be like, I don't want, you know, yeah. I want to be clear that this was not her idea. This was mine.
It would almost be like, you know, like, let's say, I'm a high up in the, you know, Nazi party and I know things aren't going well.
Right.
And so we make this concentration camp and I went to school with a kid that I hated named Greg Auschwitz.
Right.
And they're like, what should we call this? And I'm like, let's call it Auschwitz.
Let's call it Auschwitz.
And then that goes down in history as like the worst thing. And he's like, you motherfucker.
It's the kind of thing like, because, you know, a lot of stuff, and this is going to sound really weird, but a lot of stuff that Donald Trump does after January 20th could show up in a presidential library someday.
Yeah.
So there's a strong possibility that this gold wall would be recreated for posterity. So our mom's name would not just be in Trump Tower, but it would be in another place with the idea of like, this will be a historical document.
Yeah. She'll live on forever. That's the whole point.
As a Trump donor. And so it's like the being associated 100 years from now with some kid who has to like research presidents and goes to the Trump library.
I think maybe you're being a little overly pessimistic though.
Right.
Is it possible that he will be our greatest president?
It's not impossible because I mean,
that's good enough.
It's possibilities are endless. There's only like 44 people to beat, so you know it's like there's a possibility that he will somehow do something greater than beat than George Washington or Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
Or FDR. Or,
it is possible.
Like these things could occur
with the technology and the resources at his disposal. There is potential to be the greatest president
of all
time.
He has the most advanced society of any president.
Yes.
In certain ways.
And the world, you know, is like healthier than it's ever been.
Right.
More educated than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Like, really, in a lot of ways, he's set up for success.
It's the kind of thing where basically every modern president has almost like a kind of a fuck up in their own way. Because like,
yeah,
every successive president, in many cases, and really now, you're saying like, look, you have a much better world than George Washington had.
Right.
And you've done so much less with it.
You've accomplished a lot less.
Right.
It's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's probably all. I kind of wanted
to run
those ideas by you and make sure, you know, maybe I should make a last minute purchase.
You're going to come up with an extra grand or so for this wall.
That was the other fucked up part about it is it's so expensive.
Yeah, I think that given how much money it is, like that's the other part of it. Is like, how much does this cost? It's like $1,000. They'd be like, what?
The most expensive kind of fuck you joke of all time.
I know.
For my mom.
Yes.
All right. See you next time.
Woo!